Hey, everybody, welcome back to another stupendous episode of the best darn show on the internet, The Oversharon Show. Very excited today. We have a guest, and we're going to be talking about a topic that we've talked about in the past, but we have some slides, and we're coming very professional. Actually, this time, last time was just a little conversation. This time, we prepared a little more, but we are going to overshare in typical Oversharon fashion, so I'm excited about that. And before I introduce the guest or do anything else, I'm going to bring up the quote. All right, today's quote. Yikes, there we go. When the tools available to our ego are not sufficient to defend us from assaults upon our personal integrity, the shadow usually steps in unconsciously with its alternative ways of operating, unfettered by moral constraints. And that's by Mark Hunziker from the book Depth Typology.
And I believe, Joe, did you provide that with provide us with that quote at some point?
I don't believe so. That's the first time I heard it today.
How weird. I don't remember where that came from.
I like it though. So
true. I had it since we were going to do the first episode on Jungian psychology and MBTI, etc. And I thought we were going to use it then, but then Joe gave us a different one, the one by Carl Jung. So, right? I think that's the one.
Yep.
So I don't know where, I don't even remember where we got that one. But do you guys have any comments on it? Joe, any thoughts on that particular quote?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the shadow would be half of kind of what we're talking about. Instead, part of you that's suppressed. And when you reach a point of where your conscious polarization can't go any farther, what you suppressed, which is generally the shadow, is generally going to be the negative for the most part, is going to take the steering wheel, so to speak. So that's why you want to become more holistic and less polarized and embrace the negative, not to be negative, but so you can see things from a holistic, quote unquote, holy perspective. So,
yeah, I like that. And I think I could add to what he said, because the whole part about morality that it says toward the end, you know, it's like if your shadow is acting, it's not going to be filtered through morality. Now, when we're in our everyday life, when we're doing things, most people have a conscience and they know to do right and wrong. But then sometimes people commit crime, and a lot of times you hear these people that either murdered people or committed some kind of crime, and they're like, I don't even remember what happened. You know, it was kind of like I was on autopilot, or they say like I was like in a backseat and something was happening. And I feel like that's the shadow. Sometimes when the shadow takes over, that's exactly what happens. You kind of take a backseat and your avatar, I guess you could say, just acts. But that does come from, like Joe said, when people try to stuff that stuff down, or they try to look at aspects of themselves and hide them, and that's where they go in the shadow. Whenever they repress things, we repress feelings and all this stuff. Sometimes people try to be a nice guy, or a lot, they just try to be nice, and then they get to a point, it's like a boiling point, and then they just explode, they get mad, there's like a whole anger thing that happens. Might sound familiar to people out there, but this is what we're talking about. The shadow kind of just takes over. So that's another reason why this is really good stuff, because now you're going to be really more in control of your actions if you integrate these shadow things. You know, that's what shadow work is all about, right?
100%.
Well, I have a card from the Tarot of the Divine, the Hermit. Ooh. I was pulling it as you were talking.
Oh, like that. With the stag in the background, that's really cool. Nice.
Indeed. I will read from the book. It says, Druid and the White Stag from Ireland, Celtic legend. The hermit represents solitude and leaving responsibilities behind to focus inward. In the Celtic myth, the elusive white stag encourages people to drop everything and pursue spirituality. Wow. So upright, this says introspection, withdrawal, prudence, insight, and meditation. And reversed, it says recklessness, hastiness, avoidance, loneliness, and rejection. I feel like that was kind of apropos.
Yeah, very, very apropos to what we're going to be talking about, especially with that quote, because, this personality type thing, there's a lot of different reasons to learn it. And we always say the best, or the reason we learn it, and we think the best way is to get to know yourself, to really get to know everything about yourself. And I feel like it was even part of my own shadow work to learn this stuff about myself. And in that time, I was quite a hermit. So one of the steps that you might have to go through, dear listener or watcher of the show, is you might have to take some time and be alone, or at least schedule quiet time alone, where you could either meditate or just be with your thoughts, be with your own, what's going on, instead of trying to run away. And that's a great way to help to integrate the shadow, I feel, because it's going to come up, whatever it is, whatever's on your mind, it'll tell you, when you're in a quiet room. So.
Indeed. Well, we are joined again, once again, by our friend Joe. And as we already mentioned, as you can probably see from the thumbnail of the description, I guess for those listening on audio, they can't tell, but we just mentioned it anyway. We will be talking about Jungian psychology, the MBTI topic that we discussed on a previous episode with Joe. That was episode 101. And today, I decided over the last several weeks put some slides together because that's how an ENTJ mind works. I need it to make sense. I need it to be clear. I need to put it in like a format that is, concise and clear. And I need charts, and I need those kinds of things. So last time, we'll just say last time was just a chit chat, and I wasn't really, honestly, I did it. I did a, shall I say, a Brandon, where I just was like, okay, we'll just let go. We'll just chat. Like, I won't be like nitpicky about it. I won't like set up all these like things, and I'll just let us talk about it. We'll chit chat. So that was our intro, I guess we could say, to what we're calling personality typology, or what other people call that. Some people call it Jungian psychology, MBTI, Myers-Briggs type indicator discussions. So we have these slides. I have these slides, and I will be going through them, and I'll warn everybody, there's about 30 slides. They're not all material filled slides. Some of them are like section slides, but I will have Brandon and Joe here to provide any commentary on the slides, and we'll go through those. We'll see how long that takes. And then after that, we'll have some more discussion, perhaps on the typing process. And Joe can give us a little bit more information, like maybe an intro to that discussion. And maybe in a future episode, we can go into more detail. So we shall
Yeah,
see.
if you want us to go into more detail, leave comments. Or if you have any questions about the things that we cover, let us know, or anything to add, all that stuff. And before I bring up the slides, the last thing I will say is, if you're new to the Oversharing Show, thank you and welcome. Yes, we do like the Myers-Briggs here, but it's not what we live and die by. What we do on the show is we kind of just use what works for us out of any system that we find. We take the truth, distill it, what works, and the MBTI seems to work really well. So that's why we're going to be focusing on it today. So thank you and welcome if you're new. And if you're not new, hey, thanks for being an oversharonite. We love you. Make sure you hit the thumbs up, all that stuff. You guys know the deal. Subscribe if you're new. All right. I'll bring up the slides and here we go.
All right, so we're calling this oversharing personality typology, Jungian psychology, MBTI, and more. And this is the quote that Joe had read for that first episode we did. It says, sensation tells you that something exists. Thinking tells you what it is. Feeling tells you whether it is agreeable or not. And intuition tells you when it comes and where it is going.
Nice.
All right. MBTI basics. So I'm just going to give you a little preface. I'm going to, disclaimers, etc. As I said before, I'll just speak through the slides and then Joe and Brandon can comment. And I'm just going to say, I don't know everything about this. I'm studying and learning. Joe has been instrumental in helping me kind of understand a lot of this stuff, but I'm the person that has to like put it into like slides and charts and graphs and all that. So what I've written here is these are like the consolidation of my notes. I'm learning with you guys, with everyone. So this is just kind of a framework and basics that I'm going to explain to you, but I'm continuing to learn, and some of this I'll have to commit to memory because right now I still have to refer to these slides whenever I'm like, wait, what? What is this? What is that? So anyway, we'll start there. So as we had said in the previous episode, that MBTI stands for the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. It's a personality assessment derived from Carl Jung's book Psychology. Psychological Types from 1921. It was developed by Catherine Cook Briggs and her daughter, Isabel Briggs Myers, in the 1940s. You have four letters to identify each type, and there are 16 types total. This whole system is what laid the foundation for more research and contributions to this Jungian psychology and personality typology. So why do we care about this? And we said it in the last episode too, but it is useful as a roadmap to self-knowledge, you know, the quote, know thyself. It reveals deep insights into our personalities. We can learn to overcome personal tendencies or patterns of belief. We can become better versions of ourselves, not excusing our bad behavior. Like sometimes people will say with the zodiac, they'll be like, oh, well, that's just what a Taurus is. And that's so, you know, I'm stubborn or I am this or I'm that. And then they just accept it instead of saying, I could be better at that. I could do better.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Thank you for that, Sharon. We don't, you know, the Myers-Briggs, just because I'm allegedly an INTP. Allegedly I'm an INTP, so I have all these traits and I'm supposed to be a certain way. You know, I could learn that about myself, continue to act that way and piss people off in certain ways and just say, huh, it's just my type, deal with it. Right. And that's not what we're all about in the Oversharing Show. We're here about like self-work and looking at yourself. So we're really focused on it for that reason, you know, so you can get along with people better, because if you can love yourself, then you can love others better. And then you can follow the golden rule even better.
Indeed.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, I'll bring this back up. Here you go.
No worries. So yes, and recognize that everyone is different and that brings compassion for others, but also for yourself.
Yeah, I think that's really important as well. Compassion for yourself and others. Everybody. There you go.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can bigger actually for you. There we go. Okay.
So yeah, no worries. So this is a slide about the evolution of the Jungian types and all this personality typology discussion. So Jung started it right by identifying four elements to the human consciousness, and we saw that in the quote that we had above. So he had intuition, sensing, thinking, and feeling as these elements. And then from there, he came up with eight cognitive functions, each element being introverted or extroverted. And then he also split up the functions into two categories, perceiving and judging functions. Now, from there, Myers-Briggs came up with 16 types because they added this auxiliary or secondary function to a person's stack, which we will discuss more later about. And there's been continuous fine-tuning by many, many others. There's something called Socionics, which is a spin-off. It's a little different than MBTI, so we don't really look into that much. But there's other people that we have referenced. John Beebe came up with the cognitive attitudes. Linda Behrens identified temperaments and interaction styles in order to triangulate using a psychometric grid, which we showed in the last episode we did. We can show it again later, but Joe actually came up with a slightly different grid that is more helpful to him and could probably be helpful to us as we start to learn how to type. All right. And then we have Dario Nardi, who found subtypes of each personality. And if you scroll a little bit more, Brandon, we also have Dave Superpowers of Objective Personality, who found more subtypes. But I will say, sorry, Dario Nardi found 64 subtypes of each personality based on nature versus nurture. And then Dave Superpowers found like 512 subtypes. So we're not going to go in that granular detail. We're just right now we're just covering the basics. So something to keep in mind is that there are many, many MBTI podcasters, researchers, aggregators. They're constantly modifying existing terminology, even creating their own. They come up with their own concepts and ideas. There's so much content out there. We have not seen all of it. Lots of theories as well, but we're taking what makes sense and sharing that with you. Another thing to keep in mind is that these types are a best fit because there's no single type that's ever going to describe everything about you. So you kind of got to see what works the best for you. And then the one of the questions is, can your type change? And we've talked about this. Really, we don't know, but they say, people say, no, it can't change. But what we encourage is that you can use this knowledge of the type that you've been, that resonates best for you to become more balanced. And either way, it's going to be helpful to you if you take it in that right way. And then the last thing I was going to note is that I'm using this Jungian spelling of extrovert that's with an A versus the one with an O.
I never realized that. You just pointed something out I never realized.
I just found it myself.
Brandon was asking me the other day, why is it with an A?
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
So.
One thing I didn't want to bring up quickly as well is as far as the types changing. Now, we're not saying that we don't really believe that the types change. We look at it as kind of like a hardwiring system. It's like an operating system for your brain, and it's the way that you look at the world, or the way that we look at the world, our types. Now, you can change yourself and you can change your behaviors, and there's several things you could change about yourself. And I think that's why these other people have found subtypes, like 64 subtypes and then 512 subtypes, because it has to do with ha what happened, when you're raised, and things you went through, and certain work you've done, and the amount of lying you're doing to yourself, right? All these things play a big factor. But the 16 types we find, we like those to focus on those because it really is like a good baseline, a good starting line. And if you are one of these personality types, chances are you are going to exhibit this behavior, or this is how you're going to look at the world. Now, it's all going to be different, of course, because everybody's different and all the life experiences, like we said. But we like to keep it to these 16, and that's the reason why.
Absolutely.
Alrighty. All
All
those
right.
extroverts out there.
Yeah.
All right.
And by the way, I got that extrovert note from a personality hacker from their book. I didn't know that it was a Jung who spelled it with an A. And it, everyone else seems to spell it with an O. So here we have a list of references and MBTI tests. These slides at some point will put them somewhere where you can find them. I'll let Brandon figure that out and then we'll let you guys know.
And we will have all these
But
links in the episode below too, right? We could do that.
we could also put great point. Thank you. We can put these links in the description. Absolutely. So the reason I just wanted to point out the personality tests is that these are the ones Joe has recommended to use. One of these three may be helpful to you to get you close to identifying which is your type. And some of these other, we have YouTube channels there and references of people who have been instrumental in providing more context, more content toward the Jungian typology type stuff. All right. So we're going to talk about the type code, this four-letter code in the next coming slides, because this is what it confuses a lot of people, but we're going to see if we can help you break this down a little bit. So you have these four letters, right? The first box represents whether it's an introverted or extroverted letter in there, an I or an E. And the second one is whether it's N or S for intuition or sensing. Notice that I capitalized the N for intuition because there's already an I. There's an introvert, so we're not going to reuse the I. And then we have the next letter is going to be for either thinking or feeling. And the last letter is going to be for perceiving or judging. So in those four letters, whatever you pick, you're going to have 16 possible permutations, which gives you the 16 types. So some examples would be like INTP, which is Brandon, ENTJ, me, and INTJ, Joe, and ISFP, just somebody, I don't know. Whoever's an ISFP. Those are examples of what these type codes look like. So what this acronym does is provide a logical indicator of your lead function and the order of your stack, which again we'll talk about in a little bit. And that is the order of your first four cognitive functions. That's what the stack is. So for that first letter in the type code, introverted or extroverted, it's been described by some people as how you get your energy, but I have found that to be a little bit confusing, so I don't like to focus on that. Another thing to point out is it doesn't always mean that you're a people person or like a social person or not. So I also wouldn't focus on that either because there's nuance to all of that. So what this letter pertains to is the tendency or the preference of your lead function. And that we'll talk about the stack and the functions in a little bit, but that's what this pertains to. It shows your preference for either the internal or the external world. So one thing to note here is that as I was looking through all this information, I found that Jung is who called Jung called these attitudes, like whether it's the I or the E, he called them attitudes. But Then I guess much later, John Beebe or John Beebe, I don't know how to pronounce it. He used cognitive attitudes for something else. So I don't want to mix anybody up. So in the word orientation there, or the word focus that I'm using in the chart there, Brennan, you can scroll it down a bit more. Yeah, no, that's fine. You
That's
can,
okay.
yeah, right there. It's good. So I put orientation or focus. The orientation word comes from Linda Behrens, I think. That's kind of the word that she was using. Either that or, yeah, I found that somewhere. I was like, okay, that's a little better. I also use the word focus, in the chart that I made. So if you, the last bullet I have there is just to note that you're going to see small letters of I and E that are used to distinguish each cognitive function. So we'll see that later on. So looking at this chart here, you have the introverted versus the extroverted. And the focus on the introverted is the internal world. They engage with the world inside for the most part, via thoughts, ideas, feelings, memories. And then when they're observing, we'll talk about this too later, observing and deciding. When they're observing, they organize or they narrow things down. And when they're deciding, there's an inward focus toward identity or self. Now, when we're talking about the word extroverted, we're talking about the focus being on the external world, and they do that by getting real world feedback via people and experiences outside of themselves. And when they are observing, they do a lot of gathering, a lot of collecting. And then when they're deciding, there is an outward focus on others or the tribe. So that is that slide. Now, I don't know if Joe or Brandon have any comments to add to that.
Really quickly, I just want to add here, I'm going to highlight this. So been described as how you get your energy. Confusing, yes, that is pretty, it's a little confusing for people, but I think what I would say is the best way I've heard it described is if you're an introvert, it doesn't mean that you can't, you know, like I'm an introvert according to to my behavior and all this stuff, you know, an INTP. But I do still perform in front of people. You know, I've done stand-up comedy for years and I'm a
But
DJ and
you
I'm on
faced your
the microphone.
fears.
I faced my fears yet. So I'm able to do that. I stepped out of my comfort zone and stuff. But when I'm doing that stuff, there gets to be a point, or if I'm out with a bunch of friends and I'm talking a lot or we go out, there gets to be a point where I just want to retreat. I'm going to go back home. I'm going to go into a corner somewhere and just look at my phone or go somewhere. And that's
Or
kind of.
not look at your phone
Or yeah, or not look
for
at
a
my
long time.
yeah for a long time too. Yeah, exactly. Oops. And that's when I would be recharging. And now an extrovert would have a different experience allegedly when they're out with other people and in the world and stuff. That's when they're charging. And then when they're by themselves, it's more of a discharge that's going on. And that's what makes sense to me. So I figured I'd share it. Joe, is there
Yeah,
anything you wanted to?
Joe, I want you to comment a little because I feel like you understand the whole like my being an ENTJ and being an extrovert, but still finding that I like my time alone. So if you have any comments on that.
Yeah, stop thinking in terms of people. It's not always people, like Sharon was just saying. Extrovert thinking doesn't necessarily mean people. Okay, an introvert, like we were just discussing in the last one where I was describing, there is no such thing as technically as an introvert or an extrovert because we're all ambiverts. We're all going to do everything because we all have introverted functions as well as extroverted functions. An introverted function is basically just your. It's the subjectiveness, it's the inner world, it's self-explanatory kind of. It's the part that you alone are going to experience. Like Brandon's not going to experience my internal world, Sharon's not going to experience my internal world, but what we do share is the external world. So the extroverted functions. So it's really that simple introverted is your the functions that only you are experiencing. Extroverted are the ones that we all are experiencing. And when it comes to gaining your energy or losing energy, etc., it's better to think in terms of energy flow. Like when we did the psychic vampirism, I did my best explanation. It's like an when you're extroverting, you're technically pulling in energy, right? Because you're pulling in the external world that we're all experiencing into your internal world, while it's the opposite with the other direction. When you're introverted, you're pushing your internal world out into the external. So you're pushing energy out. So you think of it in terms of push and pull. And the reason they say that, like somebody who is a technically an introvert, which just means in the Myers-Briggs system, that just means that you're the cognitive function that you fall onto the most, if you're an introvert, is going to be an introverted function. And if you're using that function, and you're doing it in like an internal a manner, you're actually charging up. But if you're like an extroverted situation and you're trying to use that same cognitive function, you're actually losing energy. So that's it's more of a push and a pull. Think of electricity. That's what we're talking about.
Amazing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
I
to
may
go.
have to modify my slides later to
No, your
make
slides are
sense of it.
awesome. It's just it's just more nuance and
Yeah,
so.
it is nuanced.
Something that Joe made me think of too is he said when we're always using both functions. So even if we're introverted, we're gonna think of it like walking. You know, introverted, extroverted. Introverted, when you walk, you use both of your feet. But some people limp, right? Because they prefer to use one foot, maybe their other side hurts or whatever. So they have a strong leg and they're limping. So that's the same kind of thing. You know, if you're an introvert and you introvert most of the time, you do your, like, say for me, it's introverted thinking. So I do a lot of introverted thinking. I'm just limping. And then when I have to do extroverted thinking, it's, you know, like we were saying earlier in the other episode, it is a scale. So I can't perform both. And I really have no excuse to not be able to perform both, except for I don't like that one. That's my only excuse. And that's not really much of an excuse, right?
Yeah, and one over the other isn't better or worse. Again, it's about balance, right? So as long as, yeah, because of your personality type, you will prefer one over the other. But it's about operating in your best version of yourself within the INTP that you are.
You know, literally balancing. So it's all about balance, right? It goes back to the Tao.
Yeah, and
Check out our series on the Tao, everybody.
yes, and as we're having our conscious experience, we have all these, you can't really, we just do this, we isolate a cognitive function just to explain it, but technically they're all eight of them are working all the time. So your consciousness is a little more complicated. We're just breaking it down. Like, obviously, you have to break it down to explain it. We're using psychology, a model to break it all down, but technically it's all going on at once. So right now I'm introverted and extroverting. I'm focusing more on the extroverting because I'm talking, I'm speaking my thoughts out loud. I'm using my extroverted thinking in a sense. But technically they're all going on simultaneously right now in my consciousness. So if you really want to think of, okay, what if we cut off the external world completely? What's a good time, situation? Think of a dream that you're 100% introverted, no extroversion, a dream. And the only really good like example I could think of 100% extroverting is, have you ever been in the zone? Like they talk about the zone, like I don't know, you're playing basketball, right? And you can't miss a shot, and you're not thinking about anything. You're completely absorbed
Flow
into the
state.
external world. Yeah, a flow state. That's 100% almost extroverted, or from what I can figure at least. But so you can think of it like that. But technically, in our conscious experience right now, we're experiencing introversion and extroversion. We're experiencing our inner world, our feelings, and our thoughts, and blah blah blah. We're extroverting at the same time. So we're having this discussion. I'm looking at my computer, on and on and on. So we're just isolating to explain a model, but all this stuff is going on all the time. And if you have a preference because your personality towards an introverted function, we say you're an introvert. If you have a preference to the extroverted, we say you're an extrovert.
Well said. And the last thing I'll say, and then we could get back to the slides, is remember, everybody, this is just a model. All these things are models. And I heard this by somebody really smart said this recently. A map is just a model, right? A map of the land. It was Joe that said that, but I heard it's just a model, and it's not going to show you exactly what's there, but it's just a guide. So it goes along just what Joe said. You can just dissect these things and break them down, but everything's always going on at once. It's like a car. You have an engine, a transmission, all these different things going on at once. Right now, we're just talking about the engine. We're talking about the compression and piston number two. Like we're getting very
Yeah.
technical things here. So
Great way of putting it, Brandon. Yeah, perfect.
thank you. That's what I do.
Buffy.
All right. I've been watching a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm, so it's been affecting me. I love it. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. All right, so this would be the next box.
Yeah, the next box is about intuition or sensing. So that's the second letter in the type code. And N or S are the processes that we use to observe, perceive the world, and also learn. And you could think of this as input, like information coming in. Like, how do you gather information? This letter will tell you your preferred observing function. So, whether it's going to be an N or an S cognitive function, and which one of those will come before the other in the stack. Again, we'll get to the stack in a bit, but that's what this letter's telling you. So, if you want to scroll a little bit down, just so we can get the full, there
There
we go. So, one, we're perceiving and observing. These are the two types of perceiving and observing that we're going to do. We're either going to do intuition or we're going to do sensing. Now, with intuition, they value people using more of the intuition, they value concepts and things like that are more abstract. So they use like the imagination, things like symbols, patterns, meanings, perspectives. And they do things like pattern recognition. They theorize, they speculate, they do all these kinds of things. The thought here is, quote, what is possible, end quote. And this is kind of, you can see that it's kind of future oriented with this intuition. Now, when we're talking sensing, they value what is tangible and what is known. So they use things like experience, specifics, the five senses, facts, data, numbers. And then they trust reliable information. They live in the moment. Family and tradition are these kinds of things that they are. That are important to them for this collecting of this information that they do. And the thought here is what is provable? And this kind of looks like a past or present type of time frame for them, like when you think of what is provable versus what we said above for intuition was what is possible. So, any comments on that?
Yes, get burned.
Mine's quick. I was just going to say the really important thing I could see here is why you would want to balance. So I'm an INTP, so I am intuitive. That's how I gather my information. And I mean, what that slide said is like dead on. That's how I prefer it. But if somebody's going to come to me for information, wouldn't they also like something that I have tested too in the real world? I have a test for something. I went out and experienced it, Like I grew up all growing up, I'm like, man, I bet Italy's great. I want to go to Italy. I ate pizza, I ate spaghetti, I ate all I could. And then when I joined the Marines, I got to go to Italy for really like 6 months. I got to go there twice. Once it was for 6 months straight. It was amazing. And I got to experience it. Now I know in my soul that Italy is amazing and I love Italy. So it's the same kind of thing. You can always have some kind of, calculation or think you know what it's going to be and do all this testing. But unless you put it together with the proof, something you can prove, then you're really not gonna change anyone's mind or make any groundbreaking discoveries or whatever it is that you want to do with your life, person who's listening to the show. So that's the thing that stuck out to me immediately, and that's why I think balance is important.
Indeed.
And last thing too, I would say is this is another reason why it's good to work together with other people, because if you see an area that you're strong in, then you could get to somebody get together with somebody else that you trust, and you trust their point of view and their integrity, and then you guys can come up with something together and you have it sealed from both sides.
That's what Joe and I did with these slides. Like,
Amazing.
when we discussed that first episode, after that, I was like, you know what? I feel like we need some slides. I feel like we need something to make it visibly clear for people. When they look at something, they can make more sense of it because there's a visual aid. And Joe was like, you know what? Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good idea. So
I put myself in the shoes of myself when I first discovered this. I'm like, would I have figured this all out without AIDS? Probably not. I was like, yeah, that's a really good idea to put together visuals. So,
yeah. Did you have any comments about this slide or information on this slide?
Oh, yeah. Well, as you explained in the slide, it indicates whether you have a preference towards the intuition or a preference towards the sensing, but we all have both. But it's indicating what is higher on your preference list, so to speak. And you also have to understand we're talking about the perceiving function. So your perception has two sides of the coin. So you're always going to have intuition sensing, and they're always going to be working together. It's just that if you're, in this case, say you prefer the intuition, your sensing is kind of work for your intuition. Like it's like your intuition comes first, and then you engage the sensing to help your intuition, so to speak, to prove your point, to find data, et cetera, et cetera. And if you prefer the sensing, it's the opposite. Like your intuition becomes as in sense, I keep wanting to say slave in a sense, I guess that works, but no,
It
it works.
works.
Yeah, it works for your sensing. Your intuition works for your sensing. So you don't make an abstraction first. You do your sensing thing. You're putting together the sensory data, the experiential, et cetera, and then you engage the intuition. So that's also when you have a preference, because everybody's going to have sensing and intuition. Or when we get to the judging functions, your thinking and feeling. It's everybody's going to lean towards one part of the axis, and whatever is in front of the other is going to be like the boss of your perception, the boss of your judging, and the other one's going to insist it. And when it's like, for instance, we talked about this a little last time, but like Brandon and Sharon, they have a more of a they have the auxiliary and tertiary functions is the perceiving functions, so it's more of a 60-40 kind of ratio, so it's more in a balance anyway. So you're gonna be kind of balanced using your perception. But if you're like me and you have it like in the front, then it's more like an 80-20, 90-10 kind of ratio. So I'm really using the intuition, and I might get around to the sensing, but I knowing this, I force myself to be more sensing. I force myself, like, so I don't have the whole world crash down on me because my abstraction was all fucked up. Like, I actually will start doing the work before I get to that point and adjust my intuition as needed. So,
How
but
do you
yeah,
do
so I
that?
just wanted to add that. How do I do that?
How do you force yourself to judge, or to sense?
I just understand that I could be jumping to a conclusion. That I could be not have enough information, and I just consciously am aware of that, partly because of this. And so I immediately start, okay, let me start looking into the actual data. Does this match up? Is the actual data when I'm putting the pattern together matching up with this abstraction? And if it's not, then I have to figure out why it's not. And if that means destroying my abstraction to get to that point, which is usually what's going to happen to some degree, I'm going to do that. Because that's if you're trying to perceive what the truth is, you got to use both of those, your whole perception, not just one side of the coin. They have to work together. And I know I'm going to use my intuition more than my sensing. So I'm going to make sure I'm going to gauge my sensing and fix the problem before it crashes down on my head, so to speak.
Yeah, that makes sense. It just seems like you're taking a more grounded approach is really what, you know, you're kind of grounding yourself in the real or the physical or the what's out there world, as opposed to just running with the internal. All right, cool. Thanks for that clarification.
Yep, no problem.
Slides.
Sure.
Slides, anyone? Oops, I just was hit men end meeting. That's not
Uh-oh.
what we want to do. All right, thinking and feeling. This is the next box.
So this is the third letter in the type code, and it's about thinking or feeling, which are processes for judging and making decisions. So as we saw before, that stuff was input. Intuition and sensing was like an input, right? You can think of thinking and feeling as an output. So you could, it's like, how do you determine the value of an idea, situation, or an object? And how do you assess, evaluate, and draw conclusions about it? So after you've taken in your info with the intuition and sensing, you're going to output with your feeling and your thinking, because these are judging and deciding functions. All right, so this letter, like the other one, tells you your preferred deciding function. So which one will come before the other in the stack? So when we're looking at thinking, when you're doing the thinking, it's about impersonal metrics. Things like objective criteria, principles, reason, logic, rationale, common sense. And the thought here is, I'll do this because it makes sense and it works. Now, with feeling, it's about human-based considerations. I don't really like the word human, but I don't know how else to describe this. This, huh?
I was just going to say the feeling is very it's like animal based. It's the animal brain, and the thinking is that free that neocortex, so to speak, and they're all it's working together. You could think of like a cat. They're not really having much thinking, but they're making their decisions based on their feeling. So, but anyway.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. Well, that's interesting. So I took these those two words, I think impersonal metrics, human-based considerations, from the personality hacker information, because that kind of made more sense to me than what I had before, the way I understood it. So but yeah, this is more like yeah, I don't know how to what word to use, but yes, we'll move on. So feeling is about these like maybe human or animal based considerations, and it's things like importance, appropriateness, social considerations, and the value given to something, if you like it or dislike it, or if it's good or bad, that sort of thing. And the thought here would be, I'll do this because I like it, or other people like it. Any comments, Brandon, Joe?
I could say that going along with what Joe said, the feeling to me seems more like reacting, like you kind of are just reacting to something. And then the thinking is when you are actually pondering it, thinking it, and you choose. And it's funny because I know exactly that point now because I've got to a point where I've really learned to listen to my intuition because I get these feelings sometimes, they just pop up. And you know, I have no idea where they come from sometimes. Sometimes it'll just be a certain way to go home. You know, it'll be like, no, you should just go this way. Like I have a feeling, just feels right to take a right. And I've done it both ways where I've gone right, I went that way. And then sometimes I'll see somebody on the road that I know or run into somebody or something good will happen, or you know, and then I've also had it the other way where I don't listen to that. I listen to my thinking mind because it's like, no, this way is shorter, it makes more sense. Let's go this way. That's the way to me that makes sense. So I'll go that way and then something might happen. You know, I might get a flat tire or, you know, get stuck in traffic or something like that. And that's really what it feels to me. Sometimes you have to make that decision. Like we talk about balance, right? It's not always what is right for everyone else or what the facts say. Sometimes it's how people feel about things that you have to do. So you have to read the room, right? With these things. But yeah, that's interesting to me. I'm making some more correlations myself here. I like it.
Yeah, the feeling, like I was saying earlier, is like it's the old animal brain. And it's not a bad thing either, because you wouldn't make decisions quick enough if you relied completely on your thinking. Like thinking and feeling go together. That you build up reasons, and you're sculpting these feeling. That feeling, your feeling is just your values, like we explained last time. It's what you like and what you dislike, and thinking is the reasoning to the feeling. And like if you're a lead thinker, you're come up with reasons first, and you're shaping your feeling, and then it's the other way around. You have more of the feeling going on, and you're finding reasons to confirm your feeling, like the other way around. But it's you need the feeling. I say it's the animal brain, but it's very important, because we couldn't, like, your feelings being shaped by your thinking. It's like I said, it's tied together. So if you had to make a decision, like if you have to like think it out all the time, it's like too late sometimes to make the decision. You need to make a decision right away. So you think of your feeling as like you're like all your thinking crammed into like a feeling. And so immediately when something comes up, you just realize it, and then the feeling triggers. So it's like just a button, like oop, like. While thinking is, you got to stretch out the reasoning. It's a little more linear, while the feeling is more like black and white, off on and instantaneous, like two. So.
Yeah, this also reminds me, I like what you said because it is such a reaction thing, and it really reminds me of people when they start to do spiritual work. You hear this a lot because most times people are just going about life and they just react to everything that happens. They're kind of just like a ping pong ball and they're just flowing off of karma, which is another whole idea of cause and effect. But it really does feel like, and that's what it kind of felt like for me. Somebody would do something, I would get angry, I would just act on that anger. I'd yell or whatever it was, or whatever it is, you just go along and you go with it, right? So say you get caught off in traffic, right? It's a good example, road rage. I would just get pissed, yell at them, try to pass them, whatever, all these things. And now when that something happens, somebody takes an action, I have a little space in there and I could think about it. Now, sometimes Joe's exactly right. Someone pulls in your lane and you don't have time to think. You just have to move, right? You have to react and go with it. And I think that that's a really good thing about balancing all these and doing spiritual work is because you really get to choose what you want to do. Am I going to just react to what happened, or is this something that doesn't need my reaction? It needs me to think about it some more and think about a better way to react to the situation. Or, did somebody just pull into my lane? They're about to hit me, and you just do it. You just react. So it's good, not that any of these things, like you were saying, are good or bad. It's just better to have a choice. Because if you don't have a choice and you're just reacting and you're living your whole life off of reactions, you could kind of think of yourself as a slave because you're not even really exhibiting free will at that point. It's just an illusion, I think. You think you're making choices, but you end up in the same circumstances and the same bad situations that you always do. Something we talk about here a lot in the Oversharing Show.
Yep.
Oh, is he breaking
So I don't know. Joe, you there?
up? Are we losing? This is a good time to do a commercial. Hey, everybody, go to More Laws, More
Oh,
Problem.
yes. He's breaking up. Maybe his internet is slowing down.
Yeah. Oh, he'll be
Hey, you
back.
guys got me again?
Yeah, there, you're
Yeah.
back.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, my sound card cut out. Occasionally does that.
Oh, okay.
Of course, it's,
Oh,
yeah. But
almost
anyway.
thought your internet was down. I was like, no.
No, this time not that. I have my sound card for the audio interface. Sometimes it cuts out, but it's back. So.
Sweet.
Perfect. So, did you have anything else, or do we move to the next slide?
Joe, do you have anything you want
I don't remember what was going on up until I cut out.
to add?
So we'll
It's
just
okay.
keep
Talking about,
moving.
I think we covered all, but we're talking about basically
Yeah.
just reacting versus acting, really.
So perceiving and judging is the next slide. It's the fourth letter in the type code. And this actually indicates your dominant extroverted function. We'll talk about cognitive functions in a little bit so you understand, but this like we said before, these four letters are just a way for you to know the order of your stack of all of your four functions in your stack. So now, when we're looking at this chart or whatever, this thing that I put together, what do you call this thing? Table. So perceiving is what I've heard and what I understand it to be. Perceiving is about processing. And when you're observing, more is better. You gather as many observations as you can. It's unlimited and it's unorganized. In deciding, there's an inward focus, like, what do I think is the right decision? And then you go with that. And when we're talking about organizing their world, their external world, or I should say organizing their world, because yeah, this is a little bit confusing. Because the last little bit that I got was from the Personality Hacker book. So this last column that says organizing the world. So perceivers organize their inner world to allow outer world freedom. And I'll explain more in a second. So when we're talking about judging, which is the I'll just keep going. When we're talking about judging, this is about closure. So less is more. When you're observing, you limit it to a few, you chew on those, and you organize them over and over. Now, when you're deciding, there's an outward focus. You look around, you get a good cross-section of what others think, and then you decide. And then when organizing their world, a judger will organize their outer world to allow inner world freedom. Now, the examples that I remember from the Personality Hacker book about this were, for example, like, I am an ENTJ, right? So the J is the judging function. Or I should say it's just the judging portion. But as a quote, judger, I organize my outer world to allow for inner world freedom. And so they were saying, and this was like described me to like a T, basically. When I feel like my desk is a mess or like my space around me is a mess, I cannot concentrate. It is, I feel like I have to get my stuff organized so that I can think. And that made sense to me. I guess perceivers have to do something different. So they have to feel organized in their inner world. And this allows for their outer world freedom. So I think in the book, she says, they say that, for example, you'll see things thrown around, like clothing on the floor, whatever. Like they don't, their outer world doesn't have to be all organized because their inner world is like their mind and everything is already there. So it doesn't matter what their outer world looks like. So anyway, that's what I so far can understand it to be. But Brandon, Joe, any comments?
No, that's interesting. That it makes sense. But yeah, it's just all that letter is really indicating is if you have a what is the extroverted the your link go to extroverted function? Is it a perceiving function or a judging function? So that's why
Yeah, I
both,
forgot
even
to
though
read that bullet point.
yeah, so like both me and Sharon are quote unquote have a J in our indicator because our lead extroverted function is extroverted thinking. Sharon uses it as her savior, and I
Got
use it
it.
as my secondary function. But that's why We have a J in there, and the things you were just describing is interesting. That's actually the first time I kind of heard that, but I haven't got to that part yet, I guess. But
Yeah,
it makes
no worries.
sense thinking about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they, like, I also saw this somewhere else, and it might have been like Frank James, is that his name?
I think so.
He's funny, but I think I got this from him. So he says the perceivers appear disorganized, spontaneous, and like their life looks messy. And judgers will appear organized and like they're planned ahead. Again, it's not to say that one is worse or better than the other. It's just like we just pointed out, it's their internal versus their external. So for a judger like me to feel organized in my mind, or to begin to feel organized in my mind, I feel like I have to be organized in my outer space, in my outer world. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm never messy. It just means that when I need to concentrate, things need to be like cleared up, cleaned up, and organized. A little better than, super messy.
So then, you know, that totally makes sense from my point of view. what I was going to ask Joe was, so the P for an INTP stands for perceiving. So that would be my lead extroverted function. So what would be my
Yeah,
extroverted intuition?
extrovert intuition. That's why you have a P in the your indicator, because your lead extrovert, your extroverted tendency that you go to is going to be your extroverted intuition. So therefore, it's a perceiving function. Therefore, there's a P. So
All right,
INTP.
there we go. Back to this.
All right.
All right.
All right, so now we finally are getting around to the cognitive functions and the stack. All right, so cognitive functions are also sometimes called cognitive processes. One is the way that Carl Jung began to use it, and then later on people changed it, so it's either one's fine. But this is the ways by which we process information in our minds. Carl Jung identified two groups of cognitive processes, the perceiving and the judging. So that's for the P and the J. Each group contains four functions for a total of eight cognitive functions. And as Joe says before, we're always using them all, but the type code represents the unique order of our preferred usage, which we call the stack, or which I say other people call the stack. As you look at the two tables below, you'll notice that there's a small e or I to denote the orientation of each function, like I'd mentioned before. So this NE means extroverted intuition, and I means introverted intuition. SE is extroverted sensing, SI is introverted sensing. And for the judging and deciding cognitive functions, you have TE for extroverted thinking, TI for introverted thinking, FE for extroverted feeling, and FI for introverted feeling. And if there's any comments, you guys can comment, or I can go to the next
No, I think,
slide.
what do you think, Joe? I think that's pretty self-explanatory myself.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, so we come to this concept called the axis, and you might hear some people say this, so that's why I'm bringing it up, because if you hear it and you're like, wait, what the heck is that? I just want you to know. Each function pairs with its opposite. So for the perceiving and observing functions, the N and the S are always paired. And for the judging and deciding functions, the T and the F are always paired. And then the other thing to note is if one of them is introverted, the other will be extroverted. And these pairs, they're called an axis. Each pair would be called an axis. but you can think of them, it's a little easier to think of them as like a polar opposite. I think Brandon was saying maybe to use the word like scale or spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah,
It can
scale
be
works.
kind of scale or spectrum. Yeah, it could be a little another a couple other words that you can use to think about that. So per stack, there can only be two of the four pairs below, one from each table below. And the functions on the stack will appear in varying order, dictated by the type, which we shall see in the next slide. If you want to go to the next slide. So the stack can also be called by everybody, like I said, everybody calls them different things. So I'm just sharing for everyone's reference that the stack can also be called a hierarchy of functions, cognitive dynamics, type dynamics, and my personal favorite, my personality hacker, the car model, which we'll show a little bit about that in a second. But you can see the table to the right, which has all 16 functions. And that's the stack. You have one, two, three, four, the dominant, auxiliary, tertiary, and inferior functions. Those are the standard names that you hear for these. And then just to keep going along on the slide, we have notes for what this is all about. So each type has four main cognitive functions. The stack is the order in which the person uses the functions, and they range from the most developed function to the least developed function. The first two would be what you might think of as like your strengths and your natural talents, and the last two are more like your weaknesses, things that you can work on. So there you have the 16 unique stacks and the types. And this is only part of the stack because, as we're going to see in a little bit, you also have a shadow. So we'll talk about that in a bit. So some people make this a little bit more easy to comprehend by using like pictures. And so I like how Dave's superpowers of objective personality uses graphics to show the axes and their imbalances. So for each type, you can see which one is the main, the most used, the lead function, as some people say. And then you can see how it's, you can see the two axes, right? How it's paired with another one, and then the other one is kind of like they're kind of like a seesaw, one on top of the other, sort of. So the axis or the pair with the lead and inferior functions is greatly imbalanced. Like Joe was saying earlier, you could say it's like a 90-10 or even an 80-20 type of balance. And then the two middle functions are the other axis, and they're a little bit more balanced. They're not as off center or offset. And then we have the car model that Personality Hacker put together to explain the cognitive function stack. This one I like because it's it just seems a little bit more practical and useful. So they call the dominant, so the first one, right? They call the dominant the driver. They call the auxiliary the co-pilot. They call the tertiary the 10-year-old. And they call the inferior the 3-year-old. And in addition to this car model, they've also named each perceiving and judging function. with a unique name, instead of saying NI or NE or SE or whatever, they use words. So for extroverted intuition, they call it exploration. For introverted intuition, they call it perspectives. For extroverted sensing, they call it sensation. And for introverted sensing, they call it memory. For the judging functions, they call extroverted thinking effectiveness. They call introverted thinking accuracy, extroverted feeling as harmony, and introverted feeling as authenticity.
Yeah, that's so genius. Like, to nail it with just one word. They got the, like the perfect words too.
That's cool. What I was going to quickly say is when I read the judging deciding ones, those made more sense to me, but I think it's because my lead is TE. So these four made sense, but the perceiving ones didn't make as much sense. Maybe the intuition ones did, but the sensing ones didn't. Oh, maybe because it's sensing is my tertiary, right? So maybe that's why it didn't quite resonate for me. But yeah, so in the next slide, I'm just doing this as kind of a review to show you how the type acronym tells you what your stack looks like. So on the top left, you'll see your acronym, and on the bottom, you'll see the function stack. Now, I'm not saying yours, I'm just saying the, because this one pertains to me, actually. I'm an ENTJ. Verified many times by Joe. So, and it really does resonate for me of all the stuff that I end up watching and listening to. So an ENTJ is extroverted intuition, thinking, judging. That first letter will tell us the lead or the first function is extroverted. So, and then the last letter J tells us that the first extroverted function is judging. So it's a T or an F. Since the preferred judging function is a T, then we can determine TE is the first lead function in the stack. So we can put the TE in that first position. Now, N tells me that the secondary auxiliary B will be. Auxiliary will be an N. And since T is extroverted, the N must be introverted. So now we know the second one. But knowing those first two, now we know the rest of the stack because, again, these functions are tied together, that like an axis, like an axis, sorry, I should say. So the third one is going to be the pair that belongs to NI. And the fourth one's going to be the pair that belongs to TE. So now we know that the third will be SE and the fourth will be FI. So that's how you can tell what the stack is based on the type code. All right. So we said we were going to talk about the shadow and the cognitive attitude. So here we are. So this guy, and I don't know if it's John Beebe or John Beebe, but he is the one who proposed an eight function or a whole type model. So he added a stack for the shadow, the unconscious mind. This particular stack will use the remaining functions, the four remaining functions for the unconscious processes of the mind. And now the stack arrangement for these four will change by, and I noticed this, I don't no one I don't know no one ever said this, but I noticed that that's what it is. You swap the orientation, the I or the E of each function on the stack. And we'll see that in a second. Now, as a side note, some people propose, like I think Chase and some others propose that there are four sides to the mind. I think Carl Jung may have said that. But And they will propose like stacks for the subconscious and the superego. But that's at this point, it's theoretical. So for now, we'll just talk about the two sides. So the ego and the subconscious. The ego and the unconscious, which is the shadow. So as you can see in the next slide, you can see the ego type on the left hand, and then the unconscious, the shadow for the second stack that you have. And if you look, for example, at the first one, ENFP, the hero, we'll talk about these names in a second, but the hero is NE and the nemesis is NI. So you can see that they swapped. The NE went to NI, like I said earlier. And Brennan's highlighting the ENTP one. So you can see each one will be the same letter, but they'll swap the orientation. So that's how that stack works. And unless you guys have any comments, I can go to the next slide.
Yeah, the only thing I would like to add to that. All right, so we're doing a stack and we're pretty much saying the order of the tendencies of your preference. And once it falls into slot five and onward, we call it the unconscious because it's we're really not having a preference towards this stuff. It's usually coming out unconsciously, like we were talking at the very beginning of the episode, like your ego can't tackle something and you're spiraling or whatever, and then it starts pulling the stuff that you normally wouldn't engage in from the unconscious, and we call it that in that context, the shadow, right? But you also have to think, remember, thinking is thinking. Like we do, there's if you're some people have a preference towards introverted, and some people have a preference towards extroverted, but technically we do all of them. So if you say, we'll use Brandon as an example, he's an INTP, so his lead function is introverted thinking. He has a strong preference towards introverted thinking, and he can extroverted think as well, even consciously. It doesn't have to be unconscious. It's just that in order of preference, he's going to fall. Number five would be his extrovert. If you're gonna like watch somebody throughout the whole day and tally as much, what's their preferences. It's just logical it would be number five because he has a strong preference towards thinking, even though he has a preference towards introverted thinking, he has a preference towards thinking. So it's just logical that number five, that would your preference number five would be also thinking. So if you
Okay.
want to think of it like that, if that helps.
Oh,
That
yeah.
makes
Thank you. Yep.
Back to the slides. Oops, there we go.
So the next slide is about cognitive attitudes, and I put them in quotes again because Carl Jung had called the introverted versus extroverted the attitudes. But I guess John Beebe came around and use that word for something else. So, some people actually call these the archetypes, but they are descriptors for the behavior of each position on the stack. As I had shown before in the stack, there were some different names at the top. So for the ego, the primary functions, the first four, those are the first four. The last four correspond to the shadow. And these will go by different names based on content creator. I mean, everybody's going to be using different words for this. But for the most part, I think some of the main words for the ego, in order of one, two, three, four, you have the hero, the parent, the child, and the inferior. Those are the names of the functions. Or fun attitudes, I should say, for the functions. And then the shadow for five, six, seven, and eight positions, you have the nemesis, the critic, the trickster, and the demon. And if we go to the following slide, we can see that there's many others that I found. So I put them here just because If somebody's like, wait, what is this and what is that? These are the people that came up with some of these different names, and so you'll be able to know. So standard is usually dominant, auxiliary, tertiary, inferior. John Beebe calls them hero, parent, eternal child, and anima and animus for the fourth function. And then for the fifth through eighth functions, John Beebe calls them opposing personality, witch or senex, trickster, and demon. And Linda Behrens, for the first four, she calls them leading, supporting, relief, and aspirational. And she calls these roles, so like leading role, supporting role, etc. And for the unconscious or the shadow, Linda Behrens calls them the opposing role, the critical parent, the deceiving role, and the devilish role. And then I've seen others, like they'll call the first function the savior. They'll call the fifth function the nemesis. They'll call the sixth function a cynic. And they'll call the seventh function the blind function. I don't know who came up with those, or those are just some that I've seen as well. And then personality hacker is the one who came up with the car model. So they call the first function the driver, the second one the co-pilot, the third the 10-year-old, and the fourth function they will call the 3-year-old.
You know,
So
try to be ingenious and triangulate the actual thing, the essence of what they're trying to articulate by looking at all the terminology. Because all that terminology, everybody's trying to find the best word to figure it out. But Sharon did a really good thing about putting all the terminology. So take all those words into account and try to triangulate in your internal world where, like, what the essence of what they're talking about. At least that's how I do it. I don't know if that's how everybody else does it,
No,
but
yeah, that's how I had to do it so I could make sense of it
yeah, it
myself.
makes a lot of sense. Okay.
All right, we're coming up to the final slides. So this is about the cognitive functions. We're just going to go a little bit more detail, and then after this, we can do some more chit-chatting. So just scroll down a little bit more. You can, yeah, right there is good. So this is like a bird's eye view to understand the cognitive functions. And I mean, it's loosely based on objective personality. I kind of renamed a few things, but like this is basically kind of how they bird's eye view it. So when you're looking at the perceiving and observing functions, which for me, I was thinking about it as input, right? The NI and the NE are going to be based on concepts and the abstract. The SI and the SC will be based on the tangible and what is known. And then when you take that across the way, you can see how they do this perceiving, right? How they gather their, or how they take their input, right? Whether they organize it or gather it. So the introverted will organize and the extroverted will gather. And then when we're looking at judging functions, judging and deciding, to me, that's more like an output sort of thing. So you can see the thinking is about impersonal metrics and the feeling is about human-based metrics we were talking about earlier, like animal stuff too, that Joe was talking about. And when you take it across, you can see that the introverts will base it on identity and self, and the extroverts will base it on others and tribe. So I don't know if Joe and Brandon have anything to say about that.
Nope.
No.
Okay. So this is how I kind of put it together in my mind as best I could. So that when you're trying to figure something out about whether it's perceiving sorry, intuition or sensing or introverted or extroverted, you can kind of get an idea for how this perceiving is done. So if you look at extroverted intuition and introverted intuition, they're both based on concepts in the abstract, things like imagination, symbols, patterns, what is possible, things like that. And they do this, well, the extroverted intuitor will do this by gathering and collecting, hypothesizing and brainstorming. That's how they do things. The introverted intuition will narrow down and organize. So they do things like synthesizing, conceptualizing, and symbolizing. And when you're looking at sensing, both introverted and extroverted, this is about tangible things, the known. So experience, specifics, facts, data, five senses, what is provable? We talked about this before. And an extroverted sensor will gather and collect by doing things like participating, getting experience, doing things, noticing opportunities. That's an example. And the introverted sensor will narrow down and organize. So they review things, they link them together, they compare, contrast, that sort of thing. So I will leave it to you two to make any comments. You have any?
I think it's pretty spot on.
Yep.
And I will say, if anybody's confused at this point right now, don't worry about it. As you get into it and learn it, you can always come back to these things and it'll make a lot more sense to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I just put it into like a table format. But this for now, this may not make like any sense to you right now. But I tried to make it as simple as I could. All right, so this is about the judging and deciding, so the output. All right, so if we look at thinking, thinking is based on impersonal metrics, things like principles, objective criteria, reason, logic, rationale, common sense. And the extroverted thinker is focused outward. So you could think of it like they might ask, will this be effective for others? So they do contingency planning, scheduling, quantifying, charts, tables, graphs, outlines. Me, anybody? That's me. And then the introverted thinker, which is Brandon.
That's me.
He's focused inward. So I don't know if this resonates for him, but here's a question he might ask: how accurate can I be? And he does this by internal reasoning, deriving, refining, problem solving, taking ideas apart. I don't know. Does that resonate for you, Brandon?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, good, because then I understood the material. So then we look at feeling, which is based on human-based metrics. So things like importance, appropriateness, taking social considerations into account. And the extroverted feeler will look at what is valued by others. So they might say, like, what brings harmony? So they consider others, they're accommodating. They're connecting, they think about social graces and social needs, those kinds of things. While the introverted feeler thinks about what their own self values, what they value for themselves. So their question might be, how can I be authentic? And they do this by weighing their beliefs, thinking about their desires, the morality of things, going with their gut feelings or their reactions, that sort of thing. Any comments?
No, I
You
think I'm
know?
good.
All right, that's
Self-explanatory.
the last slide.
All right.
So we're done with the intro.
Nice.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great, great table, by the way. Great slides.
Yeah, good job, Sharon.
I could,
Grazie. the only thing I can think of maybe is on the last four ones, you could put, you know how in the beginning you put the four boxes with the X's? You maybe could put the boxes just so people could see where on their chart it is. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty spot
Can you
on.
explain that again?
Oh, maybe I'm wrong here. I'm gonna bring it
No,
back.
yeah, just tell me what you were thinking
So like
about.
this is the judging. So you put like the four boxes, one, two, three, and then say this is what goes in here. You know, and then this is the perceiving. So that's the third box, right? Any like INTP, for example. Did I get that right, or am I wrong with that?
I don't, yeah, this isn't one of the explanations for the four letters. This is more of when you're looking at the cognitive functions and
Oh yeah,
each
I guess.
cognitive function
Yeah, I
and
see.
how each cognitive function can be described.
Okay, I see what you're saying. All right.
Right,
Never
Joe?
mind then.
No.
Okay. So
So.
that's kind of the gist of the basics of MBTI. As we look into more things, if you guys want, we can do a little bit more depth on other stuff as we move on into these deeper topics. But for now, I wanted to get into a chit chat with Joe, about just kind of a general information about the typing process and kind of like who he's referenced and how he's learned some of his material. And I can, at some point when he's ready, I can bring up the type grid that he made. And over time, if it changes, we'll refine it and stuff. But for now, this is what he has come up with that has been helpful to him.
All right. May you pull up the grid right now before I start?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let me.
Just want to give a shout out to the chat. Thank you guys so much. Every time we premiere these, we hang out in the live chat and we usually premiere them or go live on Thursdays. So check out the Oversharing Show every Thursday. You can subscribe to the Brandon Bonanza YouTube channel and you'll get the notifications there. And we also have a Telegram channel. All the links are below or at morelawsmoreproblems.com and click on the menu, go to the Oversharing tab, and you'll have everything you need.
Perfect. I'm about to share the screen.
All right. Is there a all right. Yeah, I just figured out I could move the window. It was kind of in the way. All right, so this is the grid I put together to be able to type somebody. And how I go about it is I have a questionnaire. I ask certain questions, trying to fish for certain information, the read between the lines and fish for certain information. And then I have this checklist that after I'm done with the process, I've taken all my notes, I've asked all my questions, I go down a checklist, and that checklist is going to tell me what part of the grid I'm looking at. So there are many metrics to triangulate. The three main ones, as you'll see on this grid, is the interaction styles. There are basically four different interaction styles that were identified to be used as metrics for typing people. So you'll see on the top here, direct initiating outcome, and all the types that are in that row would be direct initiating outcome in their speech. The next informative initiating progression, direct responding progression, informative responding outcome. I won't get in too much detail for each one, but I guess I should explain a little. So like for instance, so some people are direct, some people are informative. Direct basically is saying things with a purpose and intent, like behind it. while informative is basically just giving information. So like a direct person goes straight to the point, generally speaking, while an informative person wants to give you all the information so you can figure it out yourself, while a direct person just is like, okay, this is what it is. It's like, so the next would be initiating versus responding. This is more or less how you tell if somebody has a preference towards an introverted function or extroverted function, as you'll see that some people will want, they like have to get into the conversation. Like they have to, if they have a point that comes into their mind immediately, they have to speak up. And so they say they take control of the situation just because of the way they're wired. They take control of the conversation more often than they don't. While a responding person, they wait to the other person's done talking for the most part, and then they add their two cents, unless they think that, you know, maybe, oh shit. It doesn't mean that you can't initiate if you're responding. If you're like, oh, I gotta speak up right now before my point is lost, they might. But you'll see two tendencies. Either somebody is constantly, you know, jumping into the conversation, steering the conversation in a different direction, interrupting, that kind of thing, while a responding person is they're letting others take control of the conversation. However, whatever direction the conversation goes, they'll just respond. They'll add on to the conversation when it's their turn to talk, on and on and on. Outcome versus progression. There are two, you'll see in their focus that either they'll be looking towards the end. Like for instance, if I'm going to tell you a story, if I was an outcome person, usually I'm going to jump to the point why I'm telling the story, and then I'm going to give you the details afterward. While progression people, they can't really distinguish the journey from the outcome. So they're just like from start to finish. Sometimes they're giving you more information than you need, but they're trying to like paint the whole context. They're trying to show you the whole timeline to how they got to a conclusion versus just jumping to the conclusion and then going in reverse and then explaining like how they, you know, how they got there after the fact. It really depends. Some people, it's really hard to identify some of the metrics. And so it's like you don't have to know all of them. Like for instance, if I determined somebody is direct and I don't know, responding, then I automatically know that they're in the category of direct responding progression. I don't need to know. I don't need to identify all three. I just need to identify what I can. And then later when I get to my checklist, like I just go by what could I actually identify on the checklist. And generally I have enough information on that checklist where I can triangulate where on the grid the person is and determine their personality type. So that's the interaction styles. I mean, it's a lot more in depth, but I don't want to confuse everybody and I have to cover the whole grid. So we'll move on to the temperaments. There's four identified temperaments in the world. This goes all the way back to Plato's Republic. People have continued on and on and on. And when Linda Behrens got this information, she was able to see, wait a minute, the temperaments that we've known about forever also line up with this stuff and can be used as metrics for identifying somebody's personality type. So the four temperaments would be the guardians, who are concrete, systematic, and affiliative. Then the artisans, the concrete, interest, and pragmatic. Intellectuals, abstract, systematic, pragmatic. And the catalyst, abstract, interest-based, affiliative. Just like the interaction styles, I don't need to know all of these things. If I could just get nail one, that's could be good enough. And I'll mark it on my checklist. And then when I go to actually determine at the end on the grid, I should have enough information to triangulate a result. So I'll break down just like I did with the interaction styles, what each one of these metrics means. Okay, concrete or abstract. A concrete person is more focused on the sensory data. That's why, if you notice, the guardians and artisans all have a preference towards the sensing versus the intuition. So it's kind of self-explanatory. We kind of went over that with the whole sensing intuition thing in the slides. While an abstract person has a preference towards the intuitive function versus the sensing. So they think in the abstract world more, they have a tendency to go into the extract world more than the actual physical world, with the physical data and all that. So your imagination, your conceptualizing, and your all that kind of deal, the patterns, seeing patterns in the abstract, seeing a pattern between things, is largely an abstract thing. So the next would be systematic versus interest. Systematic people, it's kind of self-explanatory. They like to come up with systems when making decisions, like to get by through life. When they're making decisions, they usually have a system they go by to how they do things. While an interest-based person is looking, okay, they're looking at things more situation to situation for the most part. They're like, okay, what can I, what am I getting out of this? What's the other person getting out of this? On and on and on. While systematic people more or less have already a structure, a map ready to go. Like, so, like an interest person is going to be more situation by situation based. And it's usually about motives. What's okay, what's in it for me? What's in it for them? What's in it for both of us kind of deal. Systematic people don't really, they can. That's another thing I have to go back to. Everybody does everything. But when you're going through the typing process, you're going to notice that you're going to have some more check marks on the systematic versus the interest, but you're going to find both. Like everybody is doing everything. So that's another thing to keep in mind. We're looking for preferences. What are people doing more than what they're not doing? But they're going to be doing everything. So that's what, when you first start typing, especially, it can be very confusing because you're like, what the, this paper has check marks on everything. What the fuck? Like, but you as you get better at identifying certain things in the language, like you're a little more conservative with your check mark, so to speak. But I still noticed that you for a lot of people, you're going to probably have a check mark on everything. You're just going to have a lot more check marks on certain things than others. The next thing would be, is somebody more affiliative or more pragmatic? Pragmatic is pretty simple. Pragmatic people are more individual. They do things their own way, versus doing it the quote unquote right way, the approved way, I guess is a better way to put it.
That's all three of us.
Yeah, so we're all more geared towards the individual, our own journey kind of deal. Affiliated people are more concerned with cooperation. Okay, they're like, all right. They can be individual as well, but they're also going to take in the group, the tribe as well. And if it goes against the values of the tribe, they'll like be they'll side with the tribe, even if they know it's the wrong thing to do, because that's just kind of how they're wired. While a pragmatic person is the exact opposite. They look to be individuals. They don't care as much about the group. I mean, situation by situation, like I said, everybody does everything like that. Like, for instance, for me, it was like hard to figure out, am I pragmatic or affiliative? Because I could do a little bit of both. So, when I went through the typing process to confirm myself, like I asked like five different people that have known me for a long time, like, oh, what do you think? A direct versus a responding, blah, blah, blah. And I thought I was pragmatic and affiliative as a case by case basis. And I like it was like every time I asked somebody, I explained them what pragmatic was. They're like, yeah, you're pragmatic. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, yeah, you just do things. You just do things. You're concerned with your own stuff. Like it was like so quickly. I'm like, really? But I guess I'm pragmatic. Everybody seems to think so. It was that what because certain things people are like, I don't know. But with that one, they're like pragmatic. I was like, all right. So, So that's the grid, the vertical and horizontal parts of the grid that you would be using. And then there's the actual cognitive functions, the actual stack, like Sharon was explaining earlier. You also can tell if somebody's using extroverted thinking versus introverted thinking based on their language. And like that, I don't know how deep I should get into that, or maybe we should wait until we actually do the in-depth stuff about
Yeah, we
what it
might.
looks like in the language, because it's, yeah,
Yeah,
it's a lot.
that's a little bit more depth. What I was going to point out, I guess, is the interaction styles were something that Linda Behrens came up with, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I have a question. Did she come up with like a grid to put these temperaments and interaction styles together to form the psychrometric grid that we talk about?
Well, this is how I understand how they put it together. It wasn't just Linda Behrens, it's like a whole team. It's just like any
Okay.
kind of like PhD kind of deal. There's a, you know, you've been in university that it's like you're the
Right.
head and
Yeah,
everybody else
got
has to
it.
do the work, but they don't get as much credit. But
Okay. Her
so
team, her
they're
people,
yeah,
yeah.
her team. They, you know, we've have identified when they figured out, okay, we've identified somebody to be like, I don't know, an INTJ or whatever. They started trying to figure out, okay, what's consistent? What's a consistent trait? So over time, these were the most consistent traits, and that you see like each one of the metrics for the interaction styles, each one of the metrics for the temperaments. You're able to determine, okay, INTJs always seem to be abstract. Okay, abstract. And then you're doing it for all the types. And you're seeing the patterns. Okay. Oh, okay. INTJs are abstract, but so are ENTPs. And so are INFJs or ENFJs. So, okay, that's interesting. They're all abstract versus concrete. And then eventually, over time, you get enough data in, and then you start seeing all the patterns and commonalities between all the types. And then this was the grid they were able to come up with. Okay, we have identified these three are very consistent across all the types. In this row, and you know, I don't know how to explain it. I just do it automatically. Like when I start putting everything together logically and
Yeah.
through deduction, and then I could start seeing, okay, how I could put it into, say, a grid or something like that. So
Okay.
it's hard for me to explain it past that
Oh
point because
yeah,
to me it's automatic.
I
But yeah,
guess
it's a,
my question was more, was it her team that came up with this like psychrometric grid, or like, 'cause I see the one that we showed last time was by C.S. Joseph. So I don't know if like he made it or she made it. And then he just kind of put it into his material.
No, she made it, but he made it more user friendly because he
Okay.
laid out the actual grid. This grid or his is a lot more user friendly in my opinion. Because like if you go into Linda Barrick's textbooks, there's one grid for interaction styles and there's one grid for like temperaments, and it's very
Oh.
confusing. And then you have to use both grids, and it's just a lot more
Okay.
time consuming to be more
Got it.
efficient. I don't know if Chase did. I think Chase claimed that his mentor put it together and gave it to him.
Okay.
But whoever did made it a lot more user friendly. So yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you
Want
for
to
that
come
detail.
back to us, you think, or
Sure.
should we still share them?
Well, hold on one second. Let me just point out that we haven't gotten into this topic yet, but the red and the blue are talking about the single observer and the single decider, etc. So that is something that objective personality, Dave Superpowers and his wife came up with. And it's a lot more nuance. There's a lot more nuance here. It goes into like the breaking down of the personalities into more subtypes. So it's a little bit beyond the scope of basics. But yeah, that is something that we eventually will probably talk about.
Yeah, single observer and single decider is just another metric because this grid, like if you look at C.S. Joseph or Linda Behrens, they have three metrics: the interaction styles, the temperaments, and the actual cognitive functions themselves. And if you identify a little bit of all these three things, you have enough, usually, most cases, to triangulate down to one type, at the very least, usually two, in my experience at least. But I found that this is another very consistent metric. Is to determine if somebody is a single observer, double decider, or a single decider, double observer. It's just another metric that I can go down my checklist and maybe, like, say, for instance, some like when I used to use just the three metrics, I might come down to two types, and I'm like, I don't know which type, but maybe I have enough data also taking into this into account to where I can actually have enough data to do a triangulation to one type. So that's why I added it in because I found it very consistent and it's helped me a lot. So.
Okay. Brendan, you can probably take us. Oh, sorry. I'm the one who's sharing. I forgot. So yeah, so what I was also going to kind of quickly ask about these single observers, single decider things. I think it flew out of my mind. Dang it.
It's the imbalance that we talked about the last episode. Like some people have an imbalance in the perceiver functions, and some people have an imbalance in the judging functions. So a single observer is like myself, where you have an imbalance in the perceiving functions, and a single decider is somebody who has an imbalance in the judging functions.
A greater
And
imbalance, right?
So you're pretty much just looking at the big imbalance, like for
Yeah.
instance, Jung's original eight types that he
Okay.
eight imbalances. So that's looking at it from that angle. So.
Okay. And then there's another topic which we won't get to now either, but it's called the jumper. And we won't, that's also from objective personality, right?
Yeah, that's Dave's theory. There's two trains of thought when it comes to that. I guess I'll get into it quick. I don't know which one's true, but we're going to find out in about 10 years probably, because Dave is collecting a lot of data. And that's the brilliance of this whole subtyping 512, because he's collecting data to such a accurate degree that we're going to figure out exactly what part of the personality is not movable. Like we were talking about earlier, does your personality change? We're going to figure out exactly at what level is not going to move, and at what level do things actually do move? Because all you have to do is collect enough data over time, and then retest people at one point, and that they're more mature, they've grown. Okay, what seems to have changed? So eventually, we're going to know, and that's the scientific aspect of this, is that you want to be as accurate as possible and make sure you actually type people correctly as accurately as possible, because in the terms of data collection, like you to collect accurate data, you need to accurately identify somebody's type. So I was going
Yeah.
somewhere with this, but I forgot.
Oh no, that's okay. I was going to say maybe before we close, I was just going to ask you for an example, and of course, this is not basics. We're not talking basics anymore. This is more the in-depth stuff. But can you give me an example of how you can tell that someone is a single observer or a single decider? Like when you're listening to them or watching how they behave or whatever, like what is a, and just give me an example maybe of you or me or Brandon of like what is the thing that identifies that to add to your checklist so that you know, you're like, oh, this person is a single decider because XYZ.
People versus things.
Okay.
Single deciders, you begin to notice a pattern as they're talking that their mind is going to the person. It's not that they're not considering the things and the actions and behaviors, blah blah blah, but at there it's like they have a laser focused on the person, and then everything else is secondary after that. While a single observer, they're you begin to notice their mind is more on the thing, the behavior, the idea, the thing, the physical thing, whatever, and then the person is just like a secondary kind of deal. So you see that single observers have usually are, especially when people spiral. If you could get them to spiral a little bit or get that little negativity to rise, you can kind of see it. That like
Okay, so you're a single
observer.
observer. So
I spiral
tell
over
me.
ideas and things and that
Okay.
kind
All
of
right.
while
So give me an example of me and Brandon, because we're single deciders. So
double
like
observer.
what about people would we like give me an example what we might spiral about?
People.
Like we blame people for being XYZ and or like
Yeah, but it's more of where the mind goes. It's like you're listening over time, and it's like, where does the mind go? And yet, you do see more judgy towards a person or people. Like you notice that single deciders, for instance, are more gossipy. They like to gossip about people. You see a lot of times with single observers, yeah, they could gossip too, but it's like you don't really hear much name dropping going on for the most part. They just say, okay, I have this issue, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, people are connected to that, but it's more of the actual thing that's pissing you off. And the single deciders
All
are
right.
like, you can see they're a little more gossipy. It comes out in so many different ways. So it's like, but to make it simple, it's like being mind focused on people, mind focused on things. And you see it, especially when they're a little bit spiraling, like a little bit negative. It comes out a little
Okay.
clearer. But
I
there's,
think so.
I can see that.
And it also depends on with deciders, introverted and extroverted looks a little different. Like they say, like, single deciders have a little more of an identity issue. An identity has to do with two sides of the coin. It has to do with your own personal self, but also your orientation with the tribe, so to speak. Both of those things are part of your identity, how you deal with the tribe as well as yourself. So that when I say identity, like you see more with like introverted deciders who have like introverted thinking, like an ITP or whatever, or what's the other one,
Like
ISTP, or
Brandon.
yeah, like Brandon, for instance, or even an INFP who has an introverted feeling instead of an introverted thinking, because it's still introverted deciding function and a balance towards the inner world, the inner judging function. You see that these people have a pretty strong identity when it comes to themselves, like they know who they are, but they don't really know the tribe too well. So it's like when their identity meets the tribe's identity, there's a fucking clash. And usually the tribe freaks out on them, and then they freak out on the tribe for freaking out on them, and it's in spiral. And and the other it's the other way around with, say, an ENTJ or an ENFJ who has extroverted feeling. It doesn't matter, it's just an extroverted decider. You see that they know the tribe pretty well, like they're very compassionate and on and on and on with the tribe, but they don't really know themselves too well. Like they aren't really in touch with their own thinking, their own values kind of deal. So what usually happens is the tribe usually eventually either they get into the wrong tribe and everything blows up, or the tribe starts taking advantage of them and then they blow up. And it comes out in so many different ways, but yeah, it's boiled down to a single decider is a has a kind of more of a focus on people, whether it's themselves or the tribe. And a single observer is more like on the things, like, and if it's a sensing function in the front, they're more focused on the actual world, the physical world, things that are going on. It's been my experience thus far. I don't know if this is conclusive enough, but that they seem to be more political and stuff like that. Makes sense, I guess. And the extroverted, I mean, the single observers that have an intuition like myself are usually freaking out about more of concepts and ideas and that kind of deal, or things not going the way they imagined it, etc. Like earlier, I made a song for my friend Jeff for his podcast him and his friend are doing, and I had like this idea how this song's gonna go, and like I had everything in my abstract world ready to go, and then but I kept running into fucking physical problems that were preventing me from finishing my vision, like that I had to deal with. So yeah, that's what it looks like in somebody who is a single observer. But there's so many different you can make a just we could do a show just on that metric, that
That's
aspect. So
cool. I will say that it resonated for me what you said, because I had moments where I was joining different tribes, different groups, and feeling my way through them, and then they wouldn't work out. It just didn't work out, and I'd have to leave. And at first it was just awkward, because it's like, oh, I've spent a lot of time with these people. And now it's like, now what? Like, I just leave, and yeah, just now I don't have anything to do with them, or you know what I mean? It was awkward for me. But the tendency over time was go to self, go back, go within, know yourself. Like, you don't need to know all these tribes, all these people. Like, you need to know yourself. And so I think over the period of the last several years was me like joining these different tribes to just kind of get an idea of stuff, and then like realizing that's not really where I needed to be, and needing to get to the place where I was like, oh, shadow work. I need to go within. I need to figure this out for myself. Like, no one else can do this for me.
It's funny you say
Yep.
shadow work because that's exactly where all the stuff you were putting that you weren't okay with or you didn't want to accept it, like we all do, where we put it in our shadow. But then I think it does get expressed in a group because you get a bit of the unconscious or the collective whatever, yeah, the unconscious collective, I guess, or whatever, but you get that shadow. So a lot of times these groups start, and it is their shadow that is what links them together. And you even see this online with behavior, because when you're online and you're exhibiting behavior, you're not really in front of people, so you can do it. There's a filter, you know, and you could do it sometimes even anonymously and stuff. So that's when the shadow really comes out, and you could see the shadow come out in a group of people, as far as like a crowd. If you're somewhere, if there's like a riot or something, you see this behavior. Everyone starts kind of acting like the crowd. But I think it does happen on the internet as well too. It's the same kind of thing. So it's good that you were led to shadow work. I think if you're somebody who is being led to find a tribe, to find belongingness, maybe there's something inside you that's missing that you have to find, that you have to figure out. And I'm not saying you can't join groups and have friends online and all this stuff. You could totally do that. But if you already fixed yourself and then you're going out with a bunch of people, then you won't get in as much trouble, because if it starts to turn into a cult or get crazy, then you're already strong enough in your own identity to know that you could step away, that say, hey, this isn't, I'm not okay with this behavior. You know, I don't want to do whatever the heck they're going to do at this point. And I think that's something.
Or,
Go
yeah,
ahead.
or it's okay to say, yeah, these people are okay, they're cool, they're doing their thing, but I just don't really resonate with the way they're doing it. Like, I don't have anything problem with them doing it. It's not like a bad thing or evil, or I don't, it's not that sort of thing. It's just that I just don't feel like I need to be part of this big group anymore. Like, I can do this by myself. Like, I don't need a group for this,
Yeah,
perhaps.
100%, 100%. And I think that's exactly what's going on. And we're not making judgments here, because we're all just trying to heal ourselves and work on ourselves here on the Oversharing Show. But if you're somebody who's trying to heal yourself as well, that's something to look toward, because I felt like I was doing that too, bouncing from like group to group. And then whoever the head of this online group was, as soon as he said something I didn't agree with, I'm like, oh, I don't know about this guy anymore, you know? And then you start to, you find someone else or whatever you're into. But I think we got to the point where we are kind of our own aggregators, where we just get information from all different sources and then we put it out to people and we pray that they don't worship us. But I can also say too, if you want to hear more about Sharon and my own life journey, just go check out some of the older Oversharing episodes. Sharon talks about all the different groups that she was in and the little and still the friends that she has. You know, our friend Adam is a friend that she met through these groups that she went through. And I mean, Joe's a friend that we met through a group that we were into. So it's definitely a lot of positive.
Nothing wrong with being in the
Yeah,
groups.
nothing wrong at all. It's just, if you're going to lose your identity to the group and now your identity is the group, I feel like you could run into some trouble. But hey, I mean, if you're having a good time, you know, don't listen to me. Go have fun until you figure, you know, you got to follow your own path. I got my own path up the mountaintop I'm on right now. Got to find yours.
Absolutely.
And one more thing I want to say too is, if back to what Joe was saying before about the double decider, single decision, and all that, like how some people will freak out about people and some people freak out about concepts or ideas. If you want to hear Joe freak about concepts or ideas, check out his show, because
Yeah.
that's what he does. He breaks stuff down, and I love it. I love it myself. So it's right here on YouTube, Joe from Joker's Redemption. I'm sure we'll put a link to the bottom. So go check those out too.
Yep.
Yep.
So that is kind of what we had for you today. I don't know if we have any final thoughts.
What do you think, Joe?
Mm.
I always have thoughts. I'm an INTP. I
Oh my
Yeah, I
God.
always have thoughts as well, but I just don't
I
have
know.
them.
All right. No, not really.
I love Joe. He's just so himself. It's great. I love it because sometimes people on, not really on our show, but I'll watch other shows or just my experience watching things my whole life. I'm not naming names anyone here, but sometimes people will just talk, even if they don't really have anything to say. They just feel like on the spot, and they just kind of like I'm doing now. They just keep talking and talking. But Joe is a man of few words, but when he talks, you want to listen. It's like Jay and Silent Bob, that concept. Whenever he says something, it's profound. So that's why I like when we get him on these 2-hour discussions because he has to talk for a good amount of time so we get to hear what he's got to say. And, I'd like to just say that, I'd like to reiterate one more time that, all this stuff, there's no really magic pill for anything. You're not going to learn your personality type and now your life is perfect. This is just one more step along the road. And it's a tool that we found that we really like. So check it out. It's really interesting. I mean, the correlations are pretty unbelievable. I feel like another big problem out there is a lot of people are mistyped. They take a test they see online and they see this thing and it doesn't really resonate with them as much. So my thing is take a few different tests, maybe the ones we even pointed out to, and then watch videos on that personality type, And if that sounds familiar, maybe that's the type you are. And if you have any questions about what type you are, or what you think, just leave them below. Let us know. Well, maybe we can Joe can use his expertise to give you some tips in the comments below.
Yeah, eventually I would like to start typing people. I am getting better at it. I could always be better, but I think I could get most people pretty accurate at this point. I've had a lot of practice over the last few months, a lot of trial and error, and I'm finally starting to see the light at the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel. But if you take those three tests that there were in the slides that will be in the description, if you I'm For most people, one of those tests is going to get you correct. So just watch videos on the results you get for those three ones, I guess, for a start. One of them's bound to get you correct, I guess. So,
Yeah.
So
And
yeah.
the reference links that we have for the various YouTube channels that we tend to watch that we like, we'll leave those in the description. And you can watch videos about those types from those particular channels, and those may give you more insight as well.
Pretty much learning your personality type is just learning like the mechanics of your psychology, basically. That's r really all it is, just the mechanics. And yes, there's certain tendencies when you like the same thing, like if you have a car and the engine's a certain thing, all these stats for a car is going, you're going to have pros and cons that are going to go with how this car was assembled and blah, 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 blah. It's the same with your psychology. So you're going to have tendencies for negative things and tendencies for positive things. You're gonna have gifts and curses, blah blah blah, so to speak. Like you don't study this to as there Sharon was saying earlier, to excuse bad behavior, but there's going to be certain bad behaviors that are pretty consistent with a certain wiring, like when your psychology is working in a certain way, in a certain order, with certain tendencies. There's certain things that are going to be exposed by knowing this, know thyself. You're going to know certain weaknesses and certain problems you have that you can now start consciously working on. Like for me, and here's another thing, guys. When you start working on that fourth function, because that's what pretty much what your imbalance is, that first and fourth function. You don't worry about the ones in the unconscious. They handle themselves. You handle the ones that are in the conscious mind.
Good
Really,
point.
you're
Thank
looking.
you.
Really, what you're looking at is your fourth function, which the 3-year-old, good way of putting it, because it's like you're conscious of it, but you're really bad at it. It's really undeveloped, but you're still kind of conscious of it. I like to think of the fourth function. If you think of that classic, like in Psych 101, when they have the iceberg example, and the unconscious is under the water, and the tip of the iceberg is just the ego, blah, blah, blah. I like to see the fourth function as being like halfway into the unconscious, halfway under the water, halfway above it. Because you're conscious of it, but not too conscious of it. And I've noticed that the reason why a lot of people don't want to start working on the fourth function is you're there's going to be with everything in this world, this a dualistic world. Yeah, as you're going to get better as a person as you develop that last function, but it's also a lot of people don't want to start looking at that last function because it's also going to like shake up their whole life, so to speak. Like for me, I noticed, like for instance, when I was more was just happy being Mr. Abstract Boy, intuition, blah blah blah. I wasn't taking, you always take a little in sensing, but I was coming up with all these theories, blah blah blah. Like then Truffer's like, oh, Joe's pretty interesting. Like, and the normies are like, oh, this fucking guy's fucking crazy, blah blah blah. But the Truffers, so I had a little bit of like connection with people, but as I started to develop the sensing and I started to test my abstractions, test my theories on and on and on, I found that a lot of them are kind of bullshit, and I found a lot of things out there is bullshit. And then when I started bringing that to people, I noticed they weren't very fucking happy I was bringing this to them. So it's like, so I can see why an INTJ, for example, would be like, oh, fuck the sensing. It's like, it's just like I was doing better without it. Like, because now, like, at least I fit in with the truthers. But now I don't fit with anybody, like, so to speak. But that's part of the work, is sometimes changing yourself is going to have things you perceive as kind of negative at first, because
Yeah, I think
everything, your whole life is going to be rearranged. But it has to be done. It's part of the work.
yeah,
It's part of the shadow work.
I can see that 100%. And I'll say it's called shadow work for a reason. You're supposed to do it by yourself. And that's not to say you can't get help from other people that have been on this journey or whatever. But when stuff starts coming up from your shadow and you're dealing with it and talking about it, and you're around other people that haven't really done this work, they're not going to want to know about this stuff. They don't want to know. I remember when I first came across this 16 personality types, I was so excited to find out I was an INTP. And this is another thing I want to say too. So to learn about yourself, another thing that's important to learn about yourself is to not excuse behavior that you have, but to be okay with it sometimes. So to say, you know what, I did this behavior, and sometimes you beat yourself up for things you've done in the past, but now you have these keys, you can learn about yourself and you could say, oh, this is why I was doing it. You can have some compassion for yourself and forgive yourself and then say, all right, going forward, I'm going to try to be a better person. So that's that part of it. But the whole thing with the shadow, I mean, sorry, with talking to other people about the shadow, I remember when I came across this MBTI stuff, I was so excited. I kept trying to tell people about it, but the best response I got was, oh, yeah, I heard about that in college. Yeah, it's pretty cool, whatever. But most people, they just didn't want to know. And that's something that I had to accept. A lot of people don't want to know about the things that you uncovered in your own shadow because it might lead them to what's in their shadow. And God forbid. So just be careful with this stuff, everybody. Know your crowd, read the room. If people are interested in any, it's like a normal oversharing thing. We don't try to woke rape people here. And it's the same with this because it's still truth. And it might not be the truth about what happened on 7/11 because September is seventh month. Thank you, 7/11. It's a giant commercial for 7/11. Anyway, people might not care about what happened with this bridge or with the JFK thing, right? You don't want we or the moon landing. We always talk about not woke raping people with that. But also, as you start to work on yourself and develop yourself, you're going to notice your own habits and you're going to see them out there in the world. And you're going to say, oh, look, that person's just. They're just projecting, and you go up to them and say, sir, no, you don't, you're just projecting. And the next thing they might smack you. You know what I mean? So just be careful with this information, everybody. That's all we ask. We don't want you to get into fights and
Well, that reminds me.
that also helps you integrate better. But go ahead, Sharon. That's one of those things that helps you with your friends. So you don't want to lose all your friends, Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't care. But go ahead, Sharon.
That reminds me of something that Joe and I first started talking about when I started going into more depth with this topic after that show he did with us, that he's like, I really need to dive deeper. We started talking about this concept that not everybody wants to do this. Not everybody likes this. And it's to do with also like when you can type someone and tell them about themselves, it freaks them out because then you know them. And that's scary to them because a lot of people don't want to be known. They want to hide behind a facade of
Oh,
who they think
100%.
they are.
Wow.
And
Point.
yeah. So you like you can't really like this isn't for everybody. It's for the people who want to work on self. And if you learn to type other people, I mean, be careful who you tell.
You can always use it for your own information, always
Use it for your own information.
for your own compassion, for your own, compassion for yourself and compassion for other people. Yeah, very important point. So thank everybody everyone who's still listening to this. Thank you guys for hanging out to the end. You guys are the best. Shout out to the chat, by the way, because you guys are always amazing. We have so much fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to,
I want to just say a couple of things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're nothing profound. Just that one thing is I love that we can balance our each other on this show. You're good at certain things and I just let you do them, like intros and outros and all that fluffy stuff. And I kind of just focus on the
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
In the
And
commercials and all that.
yeah, the commercials and everything. I'm just like, you can do the commercials. I'll just, I'll do that stuff. I think that's cool. I appreciate that. And when we have a guest too, we balance each other out and we can give input where the other person didn't, have that particular input, but someone else can bring it to the table, and then we just have these great conversations. So that's I just wanted to say that, and I want to thank you both for that. And the last thing I wanted to say is that Joe said he wanted to start typing people, and this was a thought we had some months ago to do some typing sessions. So, if you guys think that that's a great idea, let us know. And we in future episodes we can once we've finished talking about some of these intro topics, we can start doing some fun stuff. Maybe we'll do some hype reveals,
Yeah, and I like that idea. We can even type people that we don't know. We could just, we can have people on if they want to have a fun show, but we can also just watch a video of somebody and type them as well.
Let's type some of the famous people out there that we're all familiar with, like the Mark Passios of the world, et cetera. That'd be
Yeah,
fun.
and I like that too
The
because we can
Mark Passios of
also
the
break down like their message and where they're coming from, and we can even break down somebody, that people might not like or have a problem with,
I
and we can
love
say,
it.
this is, yeah, and we could bring the compassion, this is why you should have
Yes.
compassion for this person. I mean,
Yes, I
Sharon, I'd
love
like to
that.
thank you as well for those lovely slides. You worked so hard on them, and I know you worked on them a couple times and edited them, and I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
So that's where you bring in the awesomeness to the show, and Joe brings in the awesomeness behind the scenes most of the time. It's great that he's here on the show, but Joe is one of our behind the scenes contributors. We're always running ideas and everything by our Joe filter, just to hear what he has to say. And if you like more of Joe, I also he's done some stuff at the Brandon Bonanza show, so go check that out. There's some episodes we've had him on the show before, and over Sharon too. So go check out those episodes. More Laws, More Problems is the website. If you'd like more, if you'd like to support this show, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on the menu, go to the Over Sharon Show tab. There's plenty of ways to support us there financially, but the best way we always say to support us is to be here, hang out in the chats when we're live or premiering, and thumbs up, tell your friends about us, and all that fun stuff. And you know what? This is what I'm going to start adding. If you want to support us, just take some time when you have 5 minutes and just being all by yourself and just imagine Sharon and Brandon and the Over Sharon Show, just like doing the best that I could ever be and accomplishing all the goals I could ever accomplish. So you guys can envision a better future for us, and it's free. So just sit there and imagine us, like just be like, oh, I could see like Jay Leno on the Over Sharon Show or whatever it is, just crazy things. And we'll see what happens. We'll play around with it. Maybe we'll land somebody really famous or who knows, or Bigfoot. Maybe we'll even get an interview with Bigfoot.
Ooh,
Seems to be a
or
popular
someone
topic.
who's seen a Bigfoot.
Or someone who's seen a Bigfoot. Yeah, it seems to be a popular topic. That video's already got good amount of views compared to
Yeah.
normal. So go check out our Bigfoot video, guys, episode
It's
104.
definitely a clickbait, but it wasn't clickbait because we actually talked about it.
We brought the stuff. Yeah, we brought the goods. You know, we didn't find Bigfoot, but we found Bigfoot in the Law One, and I'm sure a lot of people didn't know it was in there. So
Yeah.
good for us. All right, cool. Well, thank you to Joe again for everything I just said and for coming on and everything
Thanks
you
for having me.
did. Yeah. All right, Sharon, what do we say to the good people?
That once you start over Sharon,
Then you totally stop being a Karen.
and remember, Brandon,
Yeah, that's right. And remember, everybody, we're not trying to tell you how to live.
maybe how to live a little bit more joyfully.
There you go. Perfect. Live with joy, everybody. Until next week, we'll see you later. Bye-bye. Take care.